苏埃拉·布雷弗曼在2022年至2023年间担任英国内政大臣，在任期间他主导关闭了中国在英国设立的所谓警察站，拒绝让英国安德鲁王子的中国商业伙伴杨腾波入境英国，并调查了2022年曼彻斯特中国总领事馆官员对香港人施暴的事件。布雷弗曼在接受美国之音特约记者李伯安的专访时表示，他在担任内政大臣期间直接接触到中共威胁英国国家安全的案子，这让他看到了中国威胁是复杂和多方面的。
Today it's our honor to have Suella Braverman to be here. She was former Home Secretary, and she's been a brilliant advocate for freedom and democracy over the world. And today, Suella, so how come the China topic strike out to you? Why have you been fiercely advocated against the infiltration from the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, as Home Secretary 2 years ago now, I really came into contact with the threat that Chinese Communist Party poses to the UK and our national security. And, I really saw firsthand the challenges at home and abroad that a more aggressive China is posing to global security. We had to deal with the issue of Chinese police stations when I was Home Secretary, a real phenomenon that had grown up over some years, but that was posing a real risk to the safety and security of many Chinese people in the UK. You know, this is unthinkable. The Chinese state operating de facto police stations on UK sovereign territory, enforcing their own laws and, you know, trying to use the arm of their laws in the UK to harass, intimidate and shut people up. And so we worked very hard in the Home Office to shut down these Chinese police stations, and we achieved some success. And we were doing that on behalf of the Chinese diaspora and those people who were here standing up for freedom, Chinese dissidents, people who were really, who deserve to exercise their freedom of speech. Chinese students, you know, again, I was dealing with the issue of many, many thousands of instances where, the Chinese Communist Party is using the university visa route as a way to exert undue influence, carry out espionage and, theft of secrets and intellectual property and all sorts of things through our universities. And my eyes were opened about the prolific nature of the Chinese threat when I was Home Secretary, and that really motivated me to be an advocate for freedom and for justice and to stand against tyranny and totalitarianism in China.
I'm sure you also dealt with a lot of threats from other countries like Russia or Iran. So what stands out in the threat from China?
Well, I think it's a very sophisticated threat, and it's multifarious. So just in recent years alone, the UK has been on the receiving end of hostile state activity by the Chinese, whether it's Chinese police stations, whether it's hostile takeovers of private companies to steal or take possession of intellectual property, whether it's attempts to control aspects of our infrastructure or our critical national infrastructure, whether it's through the use of technology and cyber attacks. We've had Chinese state-sponsored cyber attacks on our public utilities, whether it's our NHS or whether it's local authorities or whether it's the Royal Mail. You know, there's been instances where they've been able to paralyse whole systems of state services in the UK. We blocked the takeover of a company, Newport Wafer Fab, by an entity that was linked to the Chinese state because of national security reasons, a manufacturer of semiconductors in the UK. We did that pursuant to our recently implemented laws. And then, of course, there is, what China is doing, or the Chinese government is doing. You know, it's suppressing freedom. It's taking political prisoners. People who are trying to speak out against the Chinese regime are being arrested and detained on, you know, very flimsy grounds. They're having a really detrimental impact on freedom. Or whether, again, it's their treatment of the Uyghur Muslims. You know, the Chinese state is carrying out genocide.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. You know, Labour politicians used to call out the genocide. They've gone strangely quiet on challenging the Chinese government on whether they're committing crimes against humanity through a genocide when they're in government. That's an outrage and it's a disgrace. So just from a humanitarian point of view, it's the right thing to do, to call out these violations. But from a national security point of view, for British citizens, we are facing an unprecedented level of hostile activity conducted by the Chinese state, and we need to be very vigilant about that.
Yeah, you mentioned sophisticated, and the recent case about Yang Tengbo, also called H6, was one typical one. A Chinese businessman was gaining access to Prince Andrew's royal family, then influencing the UK politicians. But as Home Secretary, you were dealing with that case yourself personally. Could I ask what really made you decide to exclude him from entering into Britain again? And he was permanent secretary here, he's been here for many years. So what made you decide that actually his human rights were not, compared with national interests, were not that as important as the national interest?
Well, as the judgment sets out, I took the decision to exclude him from the UK on national security grounds. He posed a threat to our national security, and that was the advice from our security services, MI5. And they made it clear that he had connections which were well documented and evidenced with the Chinese Communist Party. And he was effectively, you know, that the evidence demonstrated that he was very closely aligned with them. And he was very active in his activities of, you know, making relationships with influential people in the UK, notably Prince Andrew. And, it, you know, he got very close to acquiring sensitive information which could be used against the UK national interest. And so the security evidence was very strong, and I'm very glad that the court upheld my decision when it was challenged.
He has been doing that for many years. While I was going through his profile on Chinese social media, he's been very public about his connection with the CCP. But why do you think it took so long for any politician to have a guts to take actions against people like that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think that these things take, they're very complex cases. They take quite a lot of time to build the evidence. You know, they will be challenged in court. So the case needs to be very robust, and you know, the case that the Home Office put together was very strong, and it was upheld upon challenge. So I think that unfortunately these things do take time. But yes, I mean, there's also been a lot of complacency. I think in the David Cameron administration, even prior to that, Tony Blair administration, were very much in the mindset of the golden era with China. And they really wanted to appease China. They wanted to befriend China so much, and because of trade and business connections and economic reasons. I think only in recent years has there been a shift in attitude in government, and that's since, you know, China's behaviour in Hong Kong, the national security legislation that they passed, which was draconian and cruel, frankly. You know, I think since then there's been a much more circumspect, cautious attitude which has been taken towards China. But it's still been difficult. You know, ultimately, the government needs to declare that China is a threat. It still won't do that. And I've urged it, my colleagues in Parliament have urged it, and the government still hasn't done that. So, you know, there's still a reluctance to take a robust attitude to China because of the commercial relationship. And that is, that's very, very worrying, because we're not, you know, that means the government is putting our safety and our security second, you know, and I think that's the wrong set of priorities. We've had spies We've had Chinese, you know, Chinese spying issue in Parliament, in the heart of our democracy. We've had Huawei. Huawei, you know, previous government, Conservative government, shut that out of our government networks. But we still have a lot of technology which still carries, we call it digital asbestos, the, you know, Chinese-linked technology. And it makes us very vulnerable. It makes us very vulnerable from a technology point of view, from an infrastructure point of view. And, there's a very strong case, I think, to take a robust posture towards China.
I'm going to play a devil's advocate a bit, because we see recently the Chancellor Richard Reeves went to China. And many politicians who were previously quite vocal about Chinese human rights issues, now they're changing their narrative, saying, yeah, Britain needs more investment. The domestic issues need to be solved first before we deal with China. How do you plan to convince the local voters here? You mentioned all those there are things happening to the diaspora community and also the technology thief. But how can you convince a common British person that actually China and the Chinese Communist Party is influencing their life and influencing their future as well?
I think that's a big challenge, actually. So I think at a political level, at a ministerial level, we can see the threat vividly. But when you go down into our communities and into our towns and cities where people might be employed by a Chinese company, or they might be, you know, buying Chinese goods, or they might be, either subconsciously or consciously very interconnected with China, I think it's harder to illustrate the threat that is posed by China. Now, you know, am I saying cut off all economic ties with China? No, I'm not saying that. I just think there needs to be a more balanced approach to China, because at the moment we've literally got our Chancellor of the Exchequer begging China for investment, begging China for commercial deals. That should not be, that's not the right balance. We should be going to China and making it clear that we're not going to tolerate their hostile acts on our NHS or their espionage, or there's going to be more transparency in what they're doing in the UK. But in some discrete areas, it might be very much in the national interest to maintain a commercial relationship. So I think the balance needs to be there. And at the moment, we have a totally imbalanced relationship where the government is turning a blind eye to the threat posed by China in the name of doing whatever it takes to get a commercial relationship. And I think that's totally out of kilter with what is necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But before, when you were Home Secretary, I remember there was one famous incident in Manchester where the Consul General came out of his embassy to beat up the Hong Kong protesters. And recently, there was one more case where the Radio Free Asia journalist was reporting in a sidewalk outside of the embassy area. And the few diplomats came out to threaten him to stop filming. And they threatened him saying, I know who you are, I know your address. So this seems like the Chinese diplomat didn't learn the lesson from what happened back then. So when you were dealing with that case, like when that case was brought to your attention, what did you feel at that point in 2022?
In 2022-23, I was furious. I was furious that these kind of tactics were being deployed in the UK. Not only does it subvert our rule of law and undermine our criminal justice system, but it's also an unacceptable way for any foreign government to behave, you know, intimidating, threatening, harassing, in some cases assaulting innocent individuals. They don't have the right to do that, and they're breaking the law in doing so. And so, you know, they were acting with impunity, and they're acting as if they're on Chinese land, not UK territory, UK soil. So I think that this was a very disrespectful to the UK government, very undiplomatic, and it was also it's criminal behaviour. So, you know, this couldn't be tolerated. Why is it okay for someone who's employed by the Chinese government to make threats and beat up someone, but, you know, a regular man who does it on the street gets arrested immediately? You know, we can't have this double standard. So this is not how a government should conduct itself, and certainly not on British soil.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. But Hong Kong is still here facing constant threats from the China, from China's side. For example, recently we got a few new bounty cases, including one girl who is 19 years old, advocating for democracy here in London and Leeds. Her name is Chloe Chan. And China just keep increasing their measures of suppression right now on the Hong Kong community. But we do have now more than 300,000 BNO Hong Kongers here. So why do you think the government has not taken more robust measures to protect those Hong Kong citizens who can vote right here in Britain?
I think that's a very good question. And I think the government is failing them right now because it's not doing enough to tackle transnational repression that's going on. And so the Hong Kong community is an incredibly valuable community to the UK. We have historic ties, but they are, you know, we extended the hand of friendship to the people of Hong Kong when, you know, China was exerting its, you know, tyrannical oppression in Hong Kong. That was the right thing to do. And the people who are here from Hong Kong are often making a very valuable contribution to the UK life and society. So I've heard again more recently of instances where Hong Kong students on campus again are being threatened, you know, are being intimidated, are being repressed, suppressed, you know, in the name of they mustn't challenge the Chinese government, and they mustn't they have to adhere to the propaganda that the Chinese Communist Party pushes out all the time. And if they don't, you know, they will get a call saying, we know where your family lives in China. And, you know, do you want do you care about your mum or your granny? You know, this is unacceptable intimidation. And it's incredibly scary for those individuals. And these people are here seeking safety and security. And this is why the government is failing these people, and we must do more. So there needs to be a zero tolerance approach by our criminal justice system and our law enforcement to this kind of behaviour. And secondly, the government needs to actually implement the measures that are ready to go when it comes to shining the light of transparency onto the activities of those who are potentially linked to these bodies. So the Foreign Influence Registration Scheme, which I enacted in the National Security Act that I delivered, needs to be now implemented. So it is ready to go and it needs to be operationalised. And that is up to the government to do.
If the Foreign Registration Act, really, Foreign Registration Bill passed, which organisation you think might have to register? Like you mentioned, United Front, Work Department in your article on Telegraph. And how about the university? Do you think they should also register themselves on the National Security Act?
I think they would be eligible for registration either on one of the tiers. We've got the enhanced tier, we've got the political tier. Mm. But there's so many universities in the UK now who are dependent on Chinese money. And that money has come indirectly or directly sometimes from the Chinese state and the Chinese government, and that is one of the sophisticated ways in which the Chinese Communist Party is exerting influence. So they will fund a lot of these universities. The universities may well often open a branch in China, and you know, to further act as a hub for students, and you know, a potential forum for espionage, and they will also be very dependent. They're very heavily dependent and allied to China and the Chinese state. And so they will be very reluctant to break those ties because they've now got the financial dependency. You know, this is... and then from those universities, you know, the research... people go into research and development. They then go into private sector technology companies. You know, it's all very, very interconnected. And the research fellowship is paid for by the Chinese government to send someone into a tech company. And then all of a sudden you've got, IP, valuable intellectual property being transferred to the Chinese state. And I think it makes us very exposed. So, yes, there's a very heavy reliance on Chinese money. And, more transparency that we can shine upon that, the better.
So university sounds like to be the main way China has been trying to infiltrate into the British establishment. Are there any specific cases you dealt with as a Home Secretary, if you can share, or any other ways you were surprised by how China infiltrated this country?
Well, one thing I was very surprised to learn was the extent of the issue. So Chinese students here who are not acting as spies are very welcome. So since 2019, I think China makes up maybe our top group of international students, or maybe our top three. They're definitely in the top three of international students. And so the scale is high and it's quite coordinated. So there's a group of universities in China which is working quite proactively to make sure students come over to the UK, the Seven Suns Universities. And they work together and they are linked to the Chinese Communist Party, and then they are sending over students who are linked to the government, and they have a mission really to ensure that there is the secrets, information, technology, other access is sent back to China. So it's quite a coordinated and, you know, high scale of activity that's going on.
The Free Speech Act and also Freedom of Speech Act on campus and the National Security Act was supposed to be the way to deal with this. I suppose that's a lot of governments like their aim. But currently, are there any legislation ongoing to deal with this kind of issue?
No. The Free Speech Act was going to be the solution. We have just heard, actually, today that the government might be U-turning and reversing its decision to pause it. So that is encouraging. But so we hope that there was going to be a new office set up to enable an individual. The government had appointed a very well-known professor, Professor Arif Ahmed, who's a real free speech advocate, to head up this office. And it was going to be the watchdog for issues particularly and specifically like the ones you talk about. So any repression, any, you know, cancellation, harassment of Chinese dissident students, you know, this kind of threatening behaviour, this independent watchdog was going to be the mechanism by which, you know, freedom could be protected. So we'll wait to see what might happen.
Yeah. So let's slightly change the topic now, because as you say, President Trump is coming back to White House. America seems to have much more robust and much more hostile policy against the Chinese Communist Party. But in the UK, we seem to be heading to a different direction, as many commentators have suggested. How do you think the UK right now or in the future can collaborate with the US on the national security issues?
Well, I think there's a lot of opportunity because Donald Trump is one of our world leaders right now who is very clear-eyed about the threat posed by China. And, you know, he's been very robust in terms of his approach to China. And so I think that I think the Trump presidency is necessarily going to have an influence on countries in the EU and the UK. I think that, you know, they will set the tone, they will set the direction for foreign policy, and, you know, a lot of Western countries will, you know, fall into line, I think, naturally. So I very much hope that, so for example, you know, this the deal, possibly one of the worst deals in the history of our foreign policy, between the UK and Mauritius, is a live topic of discussion right now in the UK. And the UK is, this Labour government is proposing to give up sovereign British territory in the Indian Ocean, which is the Chagos Islands. Chagos Islands have been British, governed by the British. They're an overseas territory for decades. It was part of the British Empire in the 19th century. And Mauritius, which is an independent country, has asserted a claim of sovereignty over the Chagos Islands. I believe that is based on very flimsy legal grounds, but they have asserted their right nonetheless. This Labour government, disgraceful and weak that it is, has agreed to surrender these Chagos Islands to Mauritius. A deal is not finalised, but this is what the UK government wants to do. The UK government is now begging Mauritius to take these islands, and we'll be paying Mauritius £9 billion to lease them back. The importance of America is that the Americans use one of the islands, the Diego Garcia Island, as a military base. Now, this is Marco Rubio, who is the incoming Secretary of State under Trump, has said that this deal is a very bad deal for American interests, because what will happen is we might sell off these islands to Mauritius, and in no time at all, the Chinese will probably offer Mauritius some money to have a presence on one of these islands. And it allows the Chinese to amplify their naval presence in the Indian Ocean. And from an American point of view, so this is bad politically because we're giving up sovereign British territory. It's bad from a strategic defence point of view because we're allowing China to have an increased presence in the Indian Ocean. And it's bad because we're letting down one of our allies, America, who rely on us to operate these bases. So the only hope now is that Donald Trump will come in and kill this deal. They're begging and they're rushing. The government is begging and rushing to do this before the inauguration. They're looking desperate and very pathetic. But I think that Donald Trump does have the power to kill off this deal by potentially saying that that America refuses to recognise Mauritius' sovereignty over the Chagos Islands. I think that would be fatal for the deal in the long run. So there is a real, there's huge influence and power that the American president will hold. And hopefully, humiliating though it will be for the UK, if necessary, I think Trump needs to come in and stop this deal from going ahead in the interest of national security, and to make sure there is a challenge to China.
Yeah, thank you, Suella.
Thank you. Well.